coming up on today's episode of the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast. Speaking of babies, how's Nova doing?
Nova's doing great. She actually said her first word today. She's almost 9 months old, and she said, cat.
No mama or dada.
She says mama, but I don't think it's in context.
She goes, mama.
That's funny.
We're going there by boat all the time, and so everybody knows that boat is really an acronym for break out another thousand. So
we've had some boat issues. And we're, you know, knocking off any barnacles we see on them. So essentially, it is a prettier oyster.
Right.
Aesthetics side of it.
And we also work them out. We make them go to the gym a little bit. We take them.
Coming to you from St. Petersburg, Florida, you're listening to the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast, the show that's the authority on where to eat in St. Pete. Here are your hosts, Kevin Godby and Lori Brown.
Hi, I'm Kevin Godby.
And I'm Lori Brown. Thank you for tuning in today.
Welcome to the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast, the podcast that's it when it comes to restaurants and food information in St. Pete.
And be sure to check out our website, stpetersburgfoodies.com. There you'll find great information, including restaurant reviews, the largest St. Pete happy hour list ever created and kept updated, and information on the newest restaurants in town. We are locals that live in downtown St. Pete, and we've been eating our way through this town for years, so you don't have to, but you should.
We have a new episode every Tuesday. Just hit the subscribe button and you'll get notified when an episode is ready for download. And then you can listen to them anytime you want, like on your morning jog or commute to work.
On today's show, our featured guests are Brian and Lindsay Rossiger from the Lost Coast Oyster Company.
Lost Coast Oyster Company is the only locally farmed oysters from the pristine Terracea Aquatic Preserve.
After Brian and Lindsay, we'll check out the latest, tastiest new salads at Greenstock, one of our favorite places for lunch.
We have a great show, so stick around. One of our favorite places to go eat in St. Pete is Engine No. 9. They've been a staple in downtown St. Pete coming up on 7 years, and they are famous for their unique and tasty burger creations. As a matter of fact, they are on the St. Pete Foodies list of best burgers in St. Pete. They also made the best hot dogs list, the best chilies, and the best wings in St. Pete. Aside from the food, Engine No. 9 is a great sports bar with lots of TVs, beer, and wine. And you can even get a regular old cheeseburger, too, so you can bring your non-adventurous eater friends. Check out Engine No. 9 at the corner of MLK and 1st Avenue North in downtown St. Pete. Their burgers can't be beat. Engine No. 9. Can you get me back on time? Ramen is the ultimate comfort food, and Booyah Ramen on the 900 block of Central Avenue is my go-to. It's so freaking good. The broth is like a silky blanket to warm up your mouth, and the hearty proteins, or just mushrooms for vegetarians, it'll have you saying, "Ooh, mommy, the umami is making my eyes roll back in my head." My favorites are the pork belly and the short rib. Mmm. And then there's the noodles. O-M-G. Go get the best ramen in St. Pete at Booyah Ramen at 911 Central Avenue in the Edge District of downtown St. Pete.
Do ya, Booyah?
Please welcome, from the Lost Coast Oyster Company, Brian and Lindsay Rossiger.
Yes, welcome, guys.
Hi, thanks for having us back again.
Hey, good to be here again.
So you guys were originally on episode 67. That was back in December 2019. And at that time, you had baby oysters and you were expecting a baby human. You've since had the baby. The oysters grew up and we ate them.
We have lots of babies around here.
Yeah. We ate the oysters, not the baby.
Yeah, right. To clarify.
Yes.
Yeah, that does seem like so long ago, but yeah, that was kind of when we just had everything set in motion. I was a month away from being due with Nova, and our oysters had just been planted. So now we really come full circle. And yeah, that's really awesome that you guys got to be there for all of it, because you came out on our boat back then and saw them as babies, and then you've eaten them now.
Yes, it was really awesome to eat them.
Do you have any babies we can eat? Oysters, that is. So speaking of babies, how's Nova doing?
Nova's doing great. She actually said her first word today. She's almost 9 months old, and she said, cat.
No mama or dada.
No, she says mama, but I don't think it's in context.
She goes, mama.
Well, I'm going to take that, though.
Yeah.
But the cat one, she was looking right at the cat. She loves our cats. She chases them everywhere. And cool. She says, cat. So I knew that it was, you know, that was a word there.
That she meant it. Yeah, that's awesome. What's your cat's name?
Benji. We have two. We have Benji and Hitty, and they're both terrified of Nova.
It'll be interesting to see what she actually calls them when she starts trying to call them by name.
Right. Who knows? Well,
yeah.
Benji has lots of nicknames. We call him like BG, like from the Bee Gees. We call him
Cheeseburger because he's fat.
That's great.
So you guys are the first and only farmers we've ever had on.
But
actually oyster farmers. Yeah. So I'm thinking before you guys, there really were no local oysters here, were there?
Not for some time. There were kind of historically, and you know, the wild populations, I mean, there weren't farmers, there were oysters in Tampa Bay. To harvest a wild oyster, the regulations are, they have to be 3 inches. And I just don't think that there were, for whatever reason, I think maybe access from predators or perhaps over harvesting, there just weren't any places in the bay that were left that were producing, you know, these market sized oysters. And, you know,
right. So they weren't getting big enough.
They weren't getting big enough, or the bars have just, they've been decimated over time. And,
right.
You know, there were, you know, some environmental conditions back in the 50s and 60s where we had some really awful things going on environmentally in the bay that probably contributed largely to their decline. But, you know, things have gotten so much better in the bay, and seagrass levels are now kind of surpassing what they were historically, even in the prior to all that environmental degradation that happened in the 50s. And so, you know, we knew that there was a ample source of food and water quality that could support this type of aquaculture. And it was just a matter of getting everything put together.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go back over everything from the last episode. People should go back and take a listen to that. I listened to it again this morning. It's really a great episode. And a couple of things we learned is that Lindsay's originally from New Jersey, exit 8, and I'm exit 9.
Yes.
Brian's from Lakeland, and you guys met at USF.
Yeah.
And you got together, then you were apart, and then you're back together.
And yeah.
what's really exciting, you kind of touched on this in the very beginning, Lindsay, is we were watching your story unfold.
Right.
We saw chapter one, and that story is really still just in the beginning, but you've come full cycle to where, planting, for lack of a better word, you can tell me what the real word is in a sec, but baby oysters, to the point where now you have distribution into restaurants in St. Pete. That is awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of surreal for us. And we're really, I'd say, on our first month of getting them into restaurants and into people's hands that want them. And we talk about it all the time that I can't believe, you know, we've grown this oyster and people are buying them to eat them and they really like them. So we're just very humbled by the whole thing. And it's taken so long to get here that we're just really appreciative that we're at this point now. And it is something that, you know, we had an idea of what it would look like at this point, but now that it's here, it's an ever evolving process, and, you know, working with Brian, it changes week to week, and we're honing in on our business and, you know, making it better as we go, but kind of flying by the seat of our pants a little as well. And we're definitely happy to share that with all of our followers. I think that's part of the fun part, like you said, is kind of watching the journey. I mean, we're new to this, and we're new to, you know, owning our own business and all of that, working together as a husband and wife. So You know, we're happy to let people have a little glimpse into what that looks like for us.
Right.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, I have to take something back. I misspoke. We have had farmers on before.
I was going to correct you, my dear, but.
And it's funny. It's the same kind of thing. Brick Street Farms.
Right.
You know, they grow inside the, what do you call them?
The shipping containers.
Yeah, shipping containers. Thank you. And it was the same thing. Like, we met them when they were first installing their very first farm. Mm-hmm. And they both had regular jobs. And we watched them go to the point where things just were happening and they quit their jobs. And this is what they do now.
Right.
Yeah, they're in Publix now. I mean, that's amazing.
Yes.
So are you guys, you still have regular jobs or not?
Still working regular full-time jobs. Taking
it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
We're busy nowadays, but we somehow managed to get it all done. We do our Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 jobs. We watch Nova. We send her to daycare a few days a week, but we have her most of the time. And then we really do the farming on like nights and weekends. So we barely have any free time, but it's fun. We like it and it's rewarding.
Well, now that you have your first batch that's come out and you've been distributing, how often are you able to, like, what's the cycle of this now, of the oysters and how and when they're farmed?
So that's a great question. We've planted since that first time that you came out with this, I believe in, might have been November.
December.
Or December. We've planted, I think, three more times since then in differing quantities. And you know, we're trying to figure out what works best, which time of year is best to kind of get these things started. And so, admittedly, we've been focusing so much on keeping our oysters alive and staying on top of them, I haven't been doing as good a job as I know I can do with our stock management and figuring out where we stand. So that's kind of where we're at now, is that we're really kicking up our record keeping and our farm management and you know, adopting some of these better practices so that we can hopefully be able to offer something year round. That's the goal. We wouldn't be harvesting
right
every week. We harvested back in October, I believe, when we first started. We went 3 weeks in a row and we had to take a week off, but then we've been going pretty steadily since then.
Yeah, and that's like I was saying before, how it's a little bit of fly by the seat of your pants. It's
right.
So the way we've been doing it now is Brian will harvest on, you know, really like early on a Friday morning. And then we deliver that same day to the restaurants, and we have a retail partner at Urban Market for individuals who want to buy them too. So it's same day harvest and delivery. And we kind of have to get our ducks in a row on that Monday. We reach out to the restaurants that we know might want some, and we kind of get our numbers. This is how many we need to pull from the water. So then Brian goes out and we just kind of he has to basically find those oysters on the farm that are sizable enough to be sold. So that's a little bit of a scramble right now, just because it's only the two of us. So we definitely have some growing pains. And that's just one of the things that happens with us starting our own farm, just the two of us, and not really having the manpower yet to handle all of the stuff that we need to do. So,
well, it's a massive learning curve. I mean,
right.
Massive.
We've had, you want to talk about some setbacks we've had? Let's talk about setbacks.
Yeah, we've had nothing but setbacks, really. So
everybody,
now we're doing well.
So for the people that aren't, that didn't listen to the previous episode, the way our farm works is that we have a series of bags that are tethered to a line that floats out in our farming location in the middle of the bay. And
Teresia Bay, correct?
The Teresia Aquatic Preserve, Joe Bay.
Right. Okay.
And you know, so we're going there by boat all the time. And so everybody knows that BOAT is really an acronym for Break Out Another Thousand. So we've had some boat issues. And so when you have boat issues, this is how things get compounded very quickly with farming. You have a boat issue. Now you can't get to your crop. Then you have a crop issue. Now you're getting behind on your work. And
then it rains a lot because we live in Florida and we're close to harvest because of excess rainfall.
Right.
Things like that like to happen to us when things are going good. So
yeah.
It's right.
Something.
Right.
But we went through all that, and I think I'm pretty thankful now that the water temperatures have started cooling down, because you know, one of the pitfalls, if you will, of our growing area, you know, the benefit being that because we have such a rich, nutrient-rich water that can have so much food for these oysters, they grow very quickly. Like, we grew our first oysters in some of them like 8 months, yeah. They were ready to go.
Wow.
The other side of that coin is that other things like to grow very well in nutrient-rich water too, like things like barnacles and sea squirts and all these types of algae and what we call in oyster farming fouling organisms. These are things that are growing on our culture gear out at the farm. They're growing on the oysters.
It's so, like having weeds in your garden. You just don't want them there, and they just grow and grow, and you have to stay on top of them, or they'll always be there.
That's like the best analogy. They're perfect.
I got it from you. Yeah. You said it the other day.
Yeah, the weeds. That's a great analogy.
But no, sure. Yep.
So, hey, guys, we're going to take a quick break, pay some bills, and we'll be right back, and I got a ton of questions about oysters for you. We'll be right back.
Hey foodies, do you know about the Zest podcast? If you're listening to us, you should be listening to them too.
They're part of the Tampa NPR station WUSF 89.7. On the Zest, you'll learn new recipes, baking tips, and barbecue secrets. You'll hear about what's ripe, what's growing, and what's in season.
The Zest podcast is hosted by Robin Sussingham, an award-winning reporter and producer who's also an avid home cook and baker. Robin's a native Floridian and has been searching out flavors and the fascinating stories behind them from Key West to Pensacola.
Learning to care for a sourdough starter and learning to bake sourdough breads really speaks to people in a very deep way. It's part of our collective history, and we're getting back to our roots and our self-sufficiency.
Just like us, the Zest podcast does interviews with chefs and restaurateurs and talks about food and recipes covering the Tampa Bay area and throughout Florida.
It's what we listen to when we're not doing our own show. Check out the Zest podcast at thezestpodcast.com. St. Pete is all about local, and this year we celebrate a local legend's 25th anniversary. Roland Oates Market and Cafe was founded in July of 94 by Bert Swain and Larry Schwartz. From the beginning, Roland Oates has made a commitment to provide St. Pete customers with the finest quality organic whole foods, nutritional supplements, and body care products at the most reasonable prices possible. And now they have a South Tampa location too. We go there for many items, but they are the only place that we go to buy our raw probiotics and other supplements. They have the best organic whole food selection in town, and on the flip side of that, they also offer a fantastic selection of wines and an unparalleled selection of local craft beer. Roland Oates has a cafe open daily, which offers delicious sandwiches, burgers, soups, salads, bowls, wraps, entrees, and fresh-made smoothies, along with a variety of prepared and packaged take-home meals located in the market itself. Do you pride yourself with supporting local businesses? Well, put your money where your mouth is and get on into Roland Oates today.
Roland Oates St. Pete is located at 2842 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Street North. And in South Tampa, you'll find them at 1021 North MacDill Avenue. Check them out on the web at rolandoates.com.
That's rollinoates.com. And Roland Oates offers online ordering with curbside pickup.
We are back! We are back!
We are back with Brian and Lindsay Rossiger from the Lost Coast Oyster Company. And they are pretty much the sole supplier of local St. Pete oysters. And one thing I want to come back to before the break, you're talking about how, hey, we're learning as we go, we're flying by the seat of our pants. I just wanted to express my opinion that I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That's how I've always handled business, because I learned if you wait until you have everything figured out, guess when you're starting? Never, because you're never going to have everything figured out.
Right. That's good advice for sure.
So I find nothing wrong with that. You're going to hit some bumps in the road, but you know, that's how you learn.
Exactly.
And how you figure out, okay, what do we need to do different and better, and what's already working perfect?
Yeah, you touched on some of the things that I think about, because I think of farming and especially food, right? Like the production of food, it's an art. And being a farmer is in some ways like being an artist. You're creating something that you're sharing with the world, and you want to put your best foot forward. You want to create something beautiful that people love. And even, you know, when you do your best and you put yourself out there, you make yourself vulnerable and you've created this thing, even though you know you've done your best, you still have this this self-doubt. And they're like, well, are people going to like it? Is it going to be good enough? Even if it is good enough and people tell you, oh, we love it, it's great, you know, you're still an artist is his own worst critic. You look at it and you see the improvements that you can make. And so, it's been
You're always going to be making improvements. That'll be an ongoing process.
So we were talking about harvesting before. So when you do that, so they need to go on ice right away?
So what happens is we are required to get them under refrigeration by a certain time in the morning, depending on the time of year. So in the warmer months, they have to be under mechanical refrigeration no later than 11 o'clock. And as the water and the air temperatures cool down in the fall and through the winter, that number gets pushed back to 1 in the afternoon. So that was one of the things that kind of held up our progress with the company was with the farming was we had to get our processing facility set up. So now we have our walk-in cooler and our certified processing facility.
Oh, nice.
And that allows us basically to get the oysters out of the water and sell them directly to restaurants and consumers. We don't have to go through a middleman. We don't have to go through a distributor. We can do that on our own.
Yeah, that's great.
That's awesome.
Definitely have more fresh product that way.
Absolutely. And
is there a season?
So no, there isn't a seasonality with our oysters. They're gonna be available year round, and we're gonna the difference with a farmed oyster that we grow at our farm. The long and the short of it is that we don't produce an oyster that reproduces. And wild oysters, when they reproduce, sometimes it alters the taste and the texture of the oyster. And so that's where that old adage, you know, except in months that don't have an R in them, right? The warmer months, that's when wild oysters are typically spawning. So our oysters are a different variety that do not spawn. They're sterile. So we're able to offer a consistent product year round.
So if you ever,
it'll be interesting to see if, I'm sorry, go ahead, Lindsay.
I was just going to say, if you ever encounter anyone that says they don't eat oysters in the summer months, you can tell them that if it's a farm-raised product, they're completely safe to do so. And that kind of more so applies for just the wild oysters.
Right, right. And I was going to say, it'll be interesting to see if there's a difference in flavor to the oysters based on colder harvests versus warmer harvests.
There absolutely is. So right now, these water temperatures, cool as they are comparatively to where they were in the summer, an oyster, what it does is it starts packing in glycogen, fat, into his reserves, and he's storing up energy for the winter. And so, you know, that's why you go to fall oyster roasts. That's when they're kind of known for being the best, you know. They're still pretty good most times of year, but they're the best in the fall when they're nice.
So bigger and fattier.
You can, I mean, when you in the fall when you shuck open these oysters, I mean, they're bursting out of the shell.
Wow.
You can really notice a difference in the plumpness of them.
That's interesting.
I want to go back to one of the things that you were talking about, Brian, just to make sure that everyone's clear. And I only know this because I did some reading this morning. Yeah. So there's old advice that says only eat oysters in months that contain the letter R in the name, like September through April, and not like May through August. And like Brian said, that's really for the wild oysters. And that's when they're also reproducing, and that changes them. So, but I also read, and this is true for what you just said, Brian, that where is it here? Yeah. Many oysters from warmer regions are now, is it triploids?
Triploids. Yep.
Triploids, which means they're bred to be sterile. Mm. Yeah. Right. So you have that issue.
It's something that gives us the opportunity to offer something consistent year round that doesn't have that variability. Because if we went out of business during the summer, that wouldn't be very good, would it?
No.
Right. So Are there any other significant differences between farm-raised versus wild?
So, yes and no. I mean, so you could have two oysters that might be grown in the same area, one of them farmed or one of them wild, and they might have a similar taste in terms of the taste profile or the miroir, if you will, of the oyster. But with farming, we're subjecting it the oysters to some kind of different environmental conditions. We're handling them, we're sorting them, we're tumbling them. And in that tumbling, we kind of encourage kind of a thicker, deeper growing, deeper cup shell versus one in the wild. You know, when you think about oysters kind of growing traditionally in the wild, they grow in these congregations and these dense bars where they're competing for space. And so they're crowded together and they might grow skinny and they might grow funkily shaped. But in with farming, we have the ability to kind of direct that process a little bit. And
right.
Yeah, each time we go out to the farm, we're really handling these oysters ourselves. Every time we go out, we're encouraging growth to be a certain way. We break off the bill a little bit so they'll grow more round and plump. And we're, you know, knocking off any barnacles we see on them. So essentially, it is a prettier oyster.
Right.
Aesthetics side of it.
And we also work them out. We make them go to the gym a little bit. We take them. I'm not kidding. We take them and we dry them. We flip these bags on top of each other and we can make the oysters dry out of the water. And what that does is it forces them to clam up, if you will, and they clamp themselves closed. And in doing that, they're developing that adductor muscle, that strong muscle that you have to cut when you shuck an oyster that's holding him together. And when you eat an oyster, you know how you get that. Yeah, I think we talked about it on the first episode, how there's a difference in the taste of the oyster even as you're eating it. You know, it starts very salty and then you get a little bit of a sweet finish. And that sweet finish is that adductor muscle. It's that sweet scallop-like meat.
Cool.
So we're trying to teach our oysters how to work out those.
That's great.
That is really cool.
And one thing I'd like to just kind of clear up for people, I think we probably did it on the first podcast. When we're talking about oyster farming, it's completely different from farmed fish. This is out in open water. So this is not like they're like farmed fish. If you want to clear that up, you guys go ahead. I'm not saying it properly, but.
So in that I like to use, there's another analogy I think of. It's ranching. You can think about a cattle farmer. He might own his cattle, but he might own his cattle, but maybe not the land. And so, hey, you know, the federal government some money to graze his cattle on federal lands. That's what we do. We own our oysters. We're not taking any oysters from the wild. We purchase seed from a hatchery. We stock it out at a farm location where it performs a service. And, you know, aside from our time and our effort, we don't have any significant input of food or they don't require any watering, right?
Right.
So it's a sustainable operation.
That's awesome. Thank you for clearing that up.
It's all natural.
Yes.
So currently, well, correct me if I'm wrong. I think the last time we noticed who had your oysters, it was Altamare, Urban Brew and Barbecue, and the Urban Stillhouse.
Yes. So we've added a few more. And Urban Brew and Barbecue, that's our retail partner, is the Urban Market that is housed in what used to be Urban Comfort. So they have a little local market there. And that's basically how you're able to buy our oysters if you don't want to go enjoy them in a restaurant. So those are
awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Retail location. So you'd order through our website and then you just go ahead and pick them up at Urban Market.
That's great. That.
Yeah, absolutely. So they've been really awesome to work with. And then for our restaurants, we have Urban Stillhouse, Alto. We have
Baskin's Chop House.
Yes. Had some representation in Ybor. There's the restaurant called Barter House over there.
Mm-hmm.
Am I missing any?
We've talked to some others, but we haven't firmed things up yet. We had some.
Yeah, we have a bunch of things on the horizon. So we're really excited. We've talked to a lot of great local chefs. And, you know, it's great that something we like about being our own processor and distributor of our oysters is we can be selective about where they end up. Mm-hmm. And living in St. Pete, as you know, it's a huge foodie destination and a huge local foodie scene. We have, of course, favorite restaurants that are held in, you know, high regard in the community. And those are the ones that we're approaching about, you know, having our oysters there. So we're able to enjoy them at the places that we would want to go enjoy oysters ourselves.
Yeah, that's great.
So can people typically find them on the weekends or do they tend to last through the week?
So I guess it varies by location. So your best shot at finding a Lost Coast Loco is checking our social media on Fridays, because that's where we're going to give you an update on our deliveries, where we're going to be that weekend. We're going to harvest on Fridays. So
and yeah, we pretty much update the social media and say, this is where you can enjoy our oysters this weekend. I think they do last into the next week, but it can vary, you know, just depending
right.
on where they are that weekend.
Right. I think and your good. Facebook page is Lost Coast Oyster Company LLC, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, or just at Lost Coast Oysters as well.
Right, and that's our Instagram handle as well.
Yep.
Okay.
And 2 days from now, October 29th, there is a Lost Coast Oyster party at Altamare Fish Bar in downtown St. Pete. That's at 300 Beach Drive. So that's a Thursday, October 29th at 6 p.m. And it's outdoors and socially distant. And pre-COVID, I was always socially distant until I had a drink or two. And then watch out. then I'm your best friend.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a really great time. Chef Joshua Breen, he's been a fan of ours since day one. I think he was our very first restaurant that we sold to. They've just been really supportive of us, and they wanted to host this launch party for our oysters. They've been out in the community for a little bit now, but this is, you know, their formal introduction to the Berg area,
nice.
If you will. So yeah, there's going to be like a tent set up on Beach Drive. It is outdoors. We of course are going to be encouraging socially distant activities, and we may bring, you know, some raffle items. There'll definitely be some food and drink specials. Brian and I will be there talking about the process and our farm and our oysters. I'm sure Brian will be shucking some for people. So it'll be a good time.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
And I can say, because we did have Lost Coast Oysters at the Urban Stillhouse a couple of weeks ago, I found them delicious. The brine's amazing. And like you said, that little bit of sweetness at the end, they were absolutely the best oysters I've ever had.
Thank you. That's so
You're
nice.
You're welcome.
Yeah, totally.
That's what we love to hear.
So remember, 2 days from now on Thursday, there's the party at Altamare Fish Bar.
On the 29th.
At 6 p.m. And Brian and Lindsay Rossiger, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you
guys.
Hey, Lori, have you ever been to Noble Crust?
I have.
What do you like there?
Pork belly, pimento cheese, and fried green tomatoes are my favorite.
Oh, yeah, I love that one too. They actually call it the FGBLT. It's fried green tomatoes, pork belly glazed with a Tabasco honey sauce and pimento cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first item on the menu, so you can't miss it. And I think they should actually call it the OMG.
Yeah, you've said that before. The chicken marsala is really good, too. It has chicken and chicken sausage, crimini mushrooms, and four cheese grits. It's so delicious.
I love that they mix classics from the American Deep South and Italy. Noble Crust is famous for their fried chicken.
I love it.
Yeah, and the eggplant parmesan is out of this world. When we do a best eggplant parm list, it'll definitely be on there.
Yes, it will.
Speaking of lists, Noble Crust made 6 of them recently. Best Italian, best casual dining, best pizza, best Bloody Marys, best meatballs, and, believe it or not, best salads.
Ooh, can I tell you another one of my favorite items?
Yeah.
The spaghetti and meatballs. It's
oh,
so good.
Man, you're not kidding. You know what? They have a brunch on Saturdays and Sundays starting at 10:30, which I love. And the deviled eggs are to die for.
Let's go to Noble Crust right now.
I'm in. Let's do it. So, Lori, you've been doing Weight Watchers.
Mm-hmm.
Which now they just go by their initials, WW.
Right.
For 5 weeks now, and you've lost just shy of 15 pounds.
Actually, as of this morning, 15 and a half.
Uh-huh. Okay. And I want to say congratulations.
Thank you.
And I'm a little behind you because the first week I was still finishing up some online culinary school assignments that I not only made, but I ate. But I'm down 7.6 right now.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you. And being on a diet isn't the only reason to have salad.
No.
But if you're going to have salad, why not have the best, most healthiest salads in downtown St. Pete?
Yes.
And speaking of which, this segment is sponsored by Greenstock, which is a chef-driven and ingredient-focused salad and wraps fast casual eatery right in the heart of downtown St. Pete.
It is.
Everything is fresh. Nothing comes out of a can. That's one of their rules. That's their number one rule over there. Mm-hmm. You can see all the fresh ingredients right in the case.
Yes.
And they even the dressings, mm-hmm. they make them from scratch, right in-house. Green Stock is what's for lunch today.
It is.
So what did you have?
I always look forward to our lunch at Green Stock. As usual, I made a you-inspired little salad. Or little green, as they call it. Mm-hmm. And today, mine was made of romaine and spinach. Then I chose my stocks, which was cucumbers, tomatoes, pickled red onions, snap peas. And then I had two additional ones, because you get four, watermelon radish and carrots. Then I chose my two finishes, which I had crispy wasabi peas and sunflower seeds. And then I added a protein, which was their delicious, yummy, fresh tuna salad. Which,
yeah, so good.
It's so good. Yeah, it was a delicious salad, lots of crunch. I put, because of Weight Watchers, I'm just doing a teaspoon of olive oil and red wine vinegar for dressing all the time with all of my salads. So that's what I had on mine.
And so how many points is that for Weight Watchers? Two. Wow, that's really good.
Yeah.
So for the very first time, I also did what they call a you-inspired, where you pick your ingredients and put it together yourself. And I went with romaine and baby kale mm-hmm. for my leafy stuff, jicama, edamame, quinoa, black beans, toasted pepitas, crispy wasabi peas, and the turmeric tahini dressing I love.
Right.
It looks like yellow mustard.
Yeah, it does look like yellow mustard. Totally. And
it doesn't taste like it, but it tastes really good. Mm-hmm. It does have some, like yellow mustard has the brightness.
Right.
And then I added hummus. And I would say the hummus at Green Stock and the tuna that you got are the best hummus and the best tuna I've ever had.
Wow. How did you like the quinoa and the black beans?
I really liked it. I mean, what I was going for was, with my romaine and baby kale, I like both of those a lot and I haven't had them in a long time. Mm-hmm. So that was easy. Mm-hmm. And then I was going for different textures and some crunchy stuff.
Right.
And with the jicama is a tiny bit crunchy. Mm-hmm. The edamame, definitely. The quinoa gives another whole dimension of texture in your mouth. Mm-hmm. So, it turns out I know what I like, and I liked it a lot.
Awesome.
So I'll pat myself on the back for making that salad. So also, you guys, this comes out on the 27th of October, so you have a few days left to get the October special feature, which is the Welcome to Fall Salad. It's a seasonal treat that's made with spinach and kale, tossed with both roasted and pickled butternut squash, red cabbage, apple, ricotta salata cheese, chili dusted pumpkin seeds, which are really good, and it's drizzled in a pumpkin vinaigrette, which is really good as well.
Right.
So check out Green Stock on the 400 block of Central Avenue in downtown St. Pete. They are now open for dine-in for the first time since March. It's been a few weeks now. They've been open for dine-in, and they have extended their hours. They used to close at 3. Now they are open at 10:30 in the morning till 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday.
Nice.
And you can order on their website, which is eatatgreenstock.com. And we have a little piece of news came out last week. You may or may not know that there's another business, St. Pete Meat and Provisions, where they have very high quality butcher shop type stuff. All kinds.
We've sampled several of them. They're fantastic cuts of meat.
Yeah, it's the top of the line stuff. Mm-hmm. It's the same ownership as Green Stock.
Yes.
And now, before you can only order that online, now you can go to Green Stock in person, perhaps to get a nice salad or wrap, but you can also shop the St. Pete Meat and Provisions right there and buy them right there in
person.
And
they sell their salad dressings and hummus and a few other of those items as well.
There's a Fresno chili blue cheese dressing that is awesome.
This is Chris Walker, and you're listening to
New on the website, we have a couple of new top 10 lists and a new restaurant review. We have the top 10 fish tacos in St. Pete, and half of them are St. Pete Beach too, I believe. We have the 10 best salads in St. Pete for 2020. And we have a review of Seaworthy Fish Bar that's in Tierra Verde. And it's the same chef and ownership as Brick and Mortar downtown. And that's Jason and Hope Ruhe. And Jason is an amazing chef. And you should go check out that review and the restaurant. Next week on the show, we'll have a fantastic recipe using Lost Coast Oyster Company's oysters. And we'll be talking to former farmer and fellow foodie, Dr. Nicholas Okeson. If you'd like to send us fan mail, hate mail, or if you have any requests for interviews or restaurant reviews, just send an email to info@stpetersburgfoodies.com.
That's it for this episode of the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks to our guests, Brian and Lindsay Rossiger.
And thanks to our sponsors,
Greenstock,
Rollin' Oats,
The Zest Podcast,
Noble Crust,
Buyu Ramen,
and Engine Number 9. Our announcer is Candice Aviles from Meet the Chef and Channel 10 News. And our theme music is provided by the Chris Walker Band.
We'd like to remind you to check out all the latest restaurant reviews, foodies news, top 10 lists, and updated happy hours on stpetersburgfoodies.com.
Please give us a rating and review on whichever app you're using to listen to the show. And remember to share the show with your foodie friends.
Until next time,
may your food be hot
and your bubbly cold.
Got any fried chicken?
Best damn chicken in the state.
Bring me 4 fried chickens and a Coke.
You want chicken wings or chicken legs?
4 fried chickens and a Coke.